Welcome to theconversation.org, making sense of these times.
Could it be? Yes, it could. Something's coming, something good. If I can wait, something's coming. I don't know what it is, but it is gonna be great.
This show is brought to you by MightyCompanions.org. And now your host, Suzanne Taylor.
So, a lovely English couple have come into this beautiful place for a day, and they sort of were a little bit incredulous that I'd come over for crop circles, like they're incredulous that people are interested, which seems to be the typical English attitude, if not worse. So I thought I would ask what they thought about the crop circles, as one of the researchers is approaching us from outside. She's a main researcher of the circles. I'm just a fan. So Peter, you were expressing some opinions.
An interesting phenomenon. I don't go along with all of this sort of extraterrestrial influence stuff.
What do you make of them? Where do you think they do come from?
I think there must be some natural explanation.
One would think that, of course. But all of us rational people would think that.
Yeah.
The problem is we can't find one.
Well, for a clear patch like that, that's completely cleared. Something started in the middle, spread out, died, and it killed whatever else was there.
So have you not seen the complex formations?
I've seen the complex formations, and they pose a real problem.
Yeah, they do. Mm. So where does your mind go?
I have never really thought about how you get these rings and these interconnected things. But,
you just don't think about it?
No.
I think that most people, actually, even in the States, just don't think about it. It's just too far out, so, you can't get your mind around it, so you just don't think about it. You're not alone, you know. I don't want to make you into a special case.
Yeah.
Sort of interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, well...
I mean, if I had nothing better to do and somebody was prepared to give me money, I'd probably spend years studying them.
Excellent. Okay, I got it. Well, thank you very much for sharing. Well, this is my good friend Barbara Lamb, who's done a crop circle presentation in my very living room.
The fascinating things about the whole crop circle phenomenon and the people who gather around it is that there's such a huge variety of responses and opinions about what's going on here in these beautiful fields of England.
It's a world.
So we have people who are convinced that, and I hear this again and again, that the crop circles are all made by the blokes from the pub out there with their stomping boards. And other people feel that they're coming from very high spiritual planes and that they have very profound meaning for humanity.
Really?
And other people feel they're done by the white balls of light. And there is indeed a lot of scientific evidence for that.
I hear that's coming in more and more,
and
that
more.
These balls of light are absolutely part of the picture.
Yes. And but then we can further ask, well, where do these white balls
of course,
come
of course,
from?
That doesn't explain
what
anything.
What kind
it's
of
just
intelligence is this representing?
And, that's the so answer, Barbara.
So there's more and more
what kind of intelligence does it represent?
Yes.
No, I'm asking.
Oh, okay. Well, I think more
yes.
and more. No, first of all, I used to think a few years ago, this is my 10th year being here in England for crop circle research from California.
Yeah.
And I used to feel that it was done by extraterrestrials in extraterrestrial crafts, perhaps sending down the balls, sometimes sending down beams of light to make the crop circles. But I've come to realize, especially this year, that I think that there's a much higher spiritual intelligence involved here. And however they're making the crop circles, there's tremendous depth of meaning about them.
Mm-hmm.
And the meaning has to do with the fact that each crop circle seems to be a mathematical or geometrical formula for large processes that are going on. From high spiritual beings, I think large groupings of spiritual beings, who are from various dimensions, who are caring tremendously about the Earth,
mm-hmm.
and how we're ruining this beautiful planet and how humanity is really going off on a very unfortunate track. So they're giving us formulas for activating helpful processes here on the Earth. And then, of course, it's up to us to carry those out. Mm-hmm. But for instance, one of the crop circles represents a mathematical formula for purifying the waters on the earth.
Mm-hmm.
That we need to do.
Oh, yeah.
And another crop circle represents a formula for taking the E. coli virus and making it into something that can be beneficial for healing life rather than killing life. Another one has to do with lifting the repression on the earth about free energy technology. In other words, influencing those who hold the corporate control and military governmental control that are suppressing these wonderful technologies that we already have on the earth that could be used to provide free energy for people, non-polluting, clean, healthy, free energy technology. So each crop circle actually represents something of that sort, something that could be really helpful. So it's inspiring to me to think that no matter how the crop circles are made, that there is a lot of thought and really benign and beneficial intent behind the crop circles. They mean something.
Well, you were
they really count.
You were suggesting before that they're setting a pattern. So when you say, well, you know, okay, it stands for that and it stands for that, but that, mm-hmm. that they were actually setting a pattern for humanity that we could then work with or that would influence us in those directions.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
Plus the fact that just the pattern itself in the physical material of the plants in the field, that starts providing an activation here on the earth that can hopefully influence people to really get busy and to carry out these changes that, mm-hmm. that are really needed. So if we could just open up to the fact that we here on earth could get in league with those intelligences, those forces, shall we say, very beneficial forces, then we could do a lot here on the earth. And I think it's really interesting that there's so many people here who are from different disciplines, not only from different parts of the world who come here to the crop circles, but they're from different disciplines. I mean, we have all the sciences are represented here. And very informally, there's no master plan about this that we know about anyway. There may be in the ethereal, but and artists and designers and architects and physicists and mathematicians and geometricians and engineers of all kinds, for instance, are coming and giving their own study to these crop circles and coming up with very interesting conclusions. So I think that there's no right or no wrong about the crop circles, but that they really are significant and important. Another aspect that I've become aware of this year, more than ever, is that the crop circles seem to be placed not only here in England but in other countries as well, near ancient sacred sites or where there are sacred springs. And some of the material coming through the channeled source here is that the crop circles are also here to activate some of the ancient sites, the very spiritual sites, that have wonderful, beneficent energies in them and that have been lying around dormant. And people can go and visit them, you know, the Long Barrows, the Serpentine Hills, and of course, Silbury Hill and Avebury and Stonehenge and some of the obvious places that we know of. But even very sort of unknown places at the bottom of hills where there were fairy rings, for instance, on the hills. And the bottom of a hill over by Knapp Hill, where there's a big declivity in the hill, a big indentation, where for centuries very important healing processes have been carried out there. And here's a crop circle right at the base of that area.
Oh, you're a wealth of information,
yes,
Barbara.
It's
you're
just
wonderful.
Incredible. And they're by sacred springs and underground streams. We've known for a few years that the underground streams sort of converge and crisscross in certain areas, and crop circles are very often placed over that. Now, some of that information is coming through some of the British dowsers. And we had 25 wonderful British dowsers here about a week ago. And they would go into the crop circles and they would douse for energies and for springs and for wells and many features about the land, as well as ley lines. And they would each take one of the aspects to douse for, and then they would collect together at the end of the day and compare what's happening under the earth here in this place where a new crop circle is. I might go in with my dowsing rods to each crop circle, and that's fascinating too.
Uh-huh.
And now, in my experience over some years, when a crop circle is man-made, or even highly suspiciously, perhaps man-made, the dowsing rods just stay absolutely parallel. But when I go into a crop circle that seems to be a genuine one, they start opening up right away upon entering the crop circle from the tram line, and then they close a little bit, and then at the center of the formation, particularly a swirl center, they just open right up. But this year, there is a crop circle where the dowsing rods stayed wide open throughout every inch of that crop circle, and that's the one by Avery Truslow. And there's no place at all where the dowsing rods even begin to come together.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Now, for me, the dowsing rods indicate that there's a change of energy in the crop circle. It doesn't necessarily mean there's a ley line or there are underground springs, but what I'm looking for is changes of energy. So you get that in the genuine crop circles.
We sent that out in email to everyone. We said everybody had
Good.
A look at that one. Who knows
Good.
Us?
Good. Excellent. That's very worth sharing.
Yeah, really.
And with each one, even that pattern, somebody yesterday we met called it fractal magnetics. Other people call it geomagnetics. Other people call it electromagnetics. It's, there are many different perceptions depending on the discipline that the viewer comes from.
Isn't this exciting? It's so juicy.
Incredible. Yes, it's so juicy, and it's so given. It's such a tremendous gift to us if we will just receive it.
Oh, this is so beautiful. I mean, the way you speak about it is really the way I hold it in my heart, and I think, gosh, if people would tune in at this level, it could be such a benefit to humankind instead
yes.
of being so kind of skeptical and critical and, people turning their backs on it. Mm-hmm. Isn't that ridiculous?
Mm-hmm.
Not to just
mm-hmm.
open to whatever
yes.
it could be, you know?
Well, most of the local people, including this lovely lady here at this bed and breakfast, they don't go half a mile out of their way to look at a crop circle.
Amazing.
They never go in them.
I know, the English are totally indifferent
there.
As far as I can tell, right?
Yeah, well, some, but then we met a man yesterday, a beautiful woodworker in Pusey. And he's quite an artist and a beautiful human being. And he's very involved in the crop circles. And he's been studying physics because of going into the crop circles and saying, there's so much more about reality and about energy here. And so he's been writing to noted physicists around the world on the email and receiving information. And his brain is so stimulated. It's lovely to meet even the local people who are very involved.
Beautiful.
Thank you,
Barbara. You can go back and I've got new breakfast cold now, so sorry about that, but I really appreciate this.
Okay.
Thank you.
Right.
It's you.
I'm the phenomena. The balls of light that
yes.
go across the crops, the crop
yes.
circle sounds that I heard
did you?
In a group 3 years ago up on Adam's Grave, a group from New Zealand. We were up there twice that night. The most incredible sounds came. And then a Vesica hibiscus came in the centre of the Aquarian Cross in the field next door, so it was almost as though we were destined to hear that.
Yes.
This was actually the sound of the things coming in.
Wow.
So
what was the sound like?
Well, quite mechanical, quite gritty, quite gritty in the teeth in a way.
Ooh.
And eerie, definitely eerie, but they came twice and very powerfully witnessed by about 20 people.
And then the next door
that evening, then this particular crop circle of the Vesica, which is very much what I work with in the centre of the cross, came into the field next door.
Oh, you took us into that one, Peter. Yeah, we went into that one with you.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, you took us into it. That was fantastic.
So that was wonderful.
Yeah.
The lay of that one was very beautiful, where the crossing things, where it shifted direction
that's
and things.
Right.
It was very beautiful.
Oh, that's
for a long time
so beautiful.
Yeah.
But then this year we've had another amazing thing at Silbury Hill. Now I had the Robert Powell group there, who are Steiner and Eurythmy and so on. That was one of the lovest groups to work with. They all knew each other. Wherever they went, they were doing the Eurythmy dancing
oh,
and the sacred chanting that the Steiner tradition had developed. So they had keys to the focal points wherever we went. And I've never worked so powerfully. I mean, the minute they arrived, we were sort of landed with our sort of feet moving. They had 3 weeks, a week at Chartres, and then 2 weeks in England with me through this area, Wales, and then up to Iona and down to Cornwall. And they were incredible to work with. And the day of this collapse of the shaft at Silbury Hill, we were actually doing an energy work at the bottom of the hill. I'd said to them, don't go up because it's actually advisable not to, and there were 40 of them. But two escaped and jumped over, and one girl crawled up and literally, I think, was the first to see this, this huge hole that has developed.
Ooh.
Now, she didn't know it shouldn't have been there.
So
she came down and talked to the rest of the group, which I didn't hear, and said, well, we went to the top of this hill, and there was this great thing. And they all said, oh, well, gee. But nobody got that back to me. Because if I'd heard that, you see, I would have immediately sounded the alarm.
Mm.
But that night, the press got hold of it, and then there was a guard put on the bottom. This whole thing was understood, a 30-foot drop. It was actually, I think, an old channel that had been dug in 17-something or other. But what was interesting was she looked down. She said it was not as though there'd been a collapse. It was though there was an actual disappearance of this much matter.
I wondered about that.
She didn't.
It's gone?
Just gone.
Well, you know what?
And she was the first to see.
Okay, there's a situation in either Russia or Siberia that happened a few years ago. I've read about it. That there was a whole series of cylinders that had disappeared out of the earth. It was like a cluster of cylinders. So what you'd see from the surface would be holes.
Right.
But they were deep too, 10 feet, 12 feet, 20 feet. Each one seemed to be a different depth. But it looked apparently like it had been drilled with a boring device. There wasn't a pile up of earth. And that's what happened
here. That's the same thing here. And in February, there'd been the most amazingly publicly witnessed UFO sighting of a craft right above the hill. And this was the end of May.
How come they have never really figured out what that's all about? How come they haven't excavated it to learn more about it?
They've been through Silbury. Yeah, there have been various digs made.
But it always seems to me it ends up in mystery, like what was it or what...
The only thing I've heard of any sense, because Isabel studied it from an archaeological point of view when she first started down here, and that is that the centre of it is composed of a circle of a very, very... a specific size, actually a circle that replicates very much with the centre of Stonehenge and many cross circles, because there's a certain, there is a certain measurement.
Is that
a circle in the centre at the base of coloured crystal from riverbeds. And that's the centre of it, which makes it a fantastic transmitter and transformer of energy. So that's its base. It was never burial.
There's
never ancient artefacts or anything like that, because that's what all the early excavators looked for, but they've never found it. When they did that thing in the 60s and went through, they actually arrived at the centre at the moment the first man landed on the moon.
Wow.
Which is quite interesting as well.
Gee.
So that's really what it is. It is just a crystal vortex of energy, a seven-stepped pyramid.
And we have no idea what people's put it there or why or...
Just as one really cannot give any definitions, even for someone like Stonehenge, which everybody dates back to... two, three thousand BC or something like that. The fact of the matter is now that under the car park in Stonehenge, there are three white splodges. They mark where, in carbon dating, the most ancient part of the site has been identified to 8,000 BC.
Really?
Wooden pillars.
Whoa.
You add 8,000.
Under Stonehenge?
Under the car park.
Oh, the car park.
Stonehenge. Wow. Nothing to do with the physical stone site, which came much later.
Wow.
For 10,000 years, that site has been a focus for every kind of spirituality. So you can't define Stonehenge as X, Y, or Z. Crop circles come in when the 12th planet Nibiru returns.
What does that mean?
Sitchins.
I understand, but the crop circles, we're getting them all the time, so...
We're getting, they come specifically to herald the arrival every 3,600 years or whatever of Nibiru.
So there's been these several years of them that are heralding this coming arrival?
And the arrival of Nibiru, of Marduk, of the Nephilim, of Yahweh, Jehovah, our creator God, who is all part of that process, because we're a hybridized race with seedings from Nibiru, and that is now back. And the great battle has been whether Jehovah would retake the planet or not. And the battle has been that he should not, because humanity has now evolved to a point where we can handle it ourselves. We're not to be dominated and controlled anymore by judgment or demigods. So he has in fact agreed to stand back, neither to help or to hinder. So we have been left, and this planet is now back. It's been identified as being back, not to the physical eye, but it's back. So Kreta Mutwa gave years ago that crop circles were closely connected with the movement of that particular planetary body. Mm. And I never heard that from anywhere else. And now, years later, with all the guidance that's coming in, this actually appears to be very possible.
So give me the sequence. It's the Zulu man who's saying this, and Sitchin.
Sitchin wrote about it.
Wrote about the 12th planet, right.
The movement of that planet every 3,600 years, it comes on an elliptical orbit through our solar system. We all go this way around, it goes that way around. And every 3,600 it comes through and creates havoc in this vicinity. Mm. Planets have been knocked off, the moon's been bashed, I think the Earth's had a huge bit gouged out of over the billions of years. Mm. But this seems to be the movement of this other force that comes through. So there's something to do with that.
And are the scientists picking up something specific that we've got a pattern going on like that?
I think there is now an identification of an energy of an object in straight astronomical terms. But all the side that we're on, which is the channeling, the guidance and so on, is very clear that we've got that great celestial battle going on. And there is a huge battle with the Archangel Michael and so on, deciding that this planet will be left to evolve itself now because sufficient of the human race have actually awakened. Uh-huh. We do have a critical mass here now.
The Sitchin work that always gets my attention or that allows me to listen to the things that have no tangible proof is the tablets where they've got these Sumerian tablets that are how many, 12,000 BC, that have the whole solar system on them, and how in the world did they know the entire things that the scientists only came up with relatively recently, some of those distant planets, and that they had the whole schema in some way that they had absolutely no way to know, except if we all come from something further away than that, seeded us here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that just never leaves my awareness.
We're seeded consciousness. And another great example of that is the stones of Ica at Nazca. And if you ever go down to Nazca, you must go to the Ica Museum of Tablets. But most people just do the lines, which are great, and then disappear. But there's a museum at Ica run by an amazing professor. Mm. Where there are 11,000 stone tablets that have been carbon dated back to Mesozoic period, 350 million years ago.
Oh my God.
Of advanced humanoids
doing
things that even we are only just beginning to understand now, with a complete code of ethics for how life needs to be handled, what is appropriate behavior, what isn't appropriate behavior. Unbelievable stuff. Beautifully marked out and etched on these incredible stones that have come up through the desert nearby through natural erosion. Mm-hmm. And the world is just beginning to pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm. Simon Peter, have I got the right date on the Sumerian tablets? Is it 12,000 BC or is it even older? Am I in the wrong era?
No, I think it is from about that period, but it's from there and further back. It definitely goes for that. And Sitchin's work is great because it's not channeled. It's actually classical research in ancient texts, in Babylonian texts, in ancient biblical, in Kabbalistic. It's classic research. And he is a real academic intellectual.
And why are we not paying more attention to him in the scientific academic community? Because he still seems to be operating as a fringe figure.
He is, but Chet Snow is bringing him out again next year to Sedona. He's had him out three times now lecturing, but I agree with you, it's still only in this sort of relative fringe area.
Is there some reason for that?
It's too challenging. You've now got the man who's, and I've forgotten his name now, who's bringing through fractal concepts, fractal geometry, and whole understandings, of course, of the proof of oneness, which is coming again through crop circles, holographic, fractal geometry and connections. The proof that everything is replicated. And Sir Brown Swim talks about this, exactly his subject. And this is now, of course, counter very strongly to Darwinianism. And as the world is based, the academic intellectual world is still based and held firmly into Darwinianism.
But you know, there's a chink in the Darwinianism that's recognized, which is that it doesn't account for original cause. It only accounts for a certain aspect of development inside of something else that's still unaccounted for.
In more enlightened circles.
No, even in the scientific community, they're aware that there's holes in that. Where did the bird come from? Where did the eye come from? Where, you know, you just read this
good.
Over
but,
and over.
But at least this breaks it even more. And I think there is resistance, and I think that's one of the reasons of resistance. Do you know Dr. Theodore Hall in America, his work? I've been put onto him quite recently, and he's very, very advanced on this and discusses Darwinianism and dissects it and its ramifications over the last 100 years or so. And that's a very good line. I'll put you onto him. He's got some
good,
really
I'd like to know
marvelous
that.
Stuff.
Well, this is the chatter now in real science community, not just the fringe community, right. That... You know, there is this acknowledged vacuum of awareness. Yes.
Well, he's very, very onto that case. He's one of the highest sort of Harvard graduates turned alternative who has been totally
ostracized. Harvard's always a good
and
name.
Pushed right out into the fringes, which is where he operates, which is where we have to be. Those of us who are really pioneering something different are not going to be recognized easily.
But isn't it awesome when you stop to think about where in the world, first of all, did everything come from? Where did it come from? And you know, the inquiring mind, which is what we're built in, is built into us, wants to know.
Other than for the fundamentalist, who is fear-based, who is rigid and inflexible, and who then makes a god out of
unwritten,
and then they stick and they get stuck. That's all about.
Well, they call it God, but then if you try to understand where that comes from, there's no explanation. And when you start to really try to discover in a scientific way, you might say, what it's all about, you just absolutely hit a wall. There's no way to see behind where in the world did it all come from. And then there's the first thing of where everything came from, which can be described as the event it was, but not why the event. It can be described as the Big Bang. Oh, great, but where did the stuff come from that made the Big Bang, you know? And then when you start to think about speciation, you think about all these incredible aspects of things, that where did the essences of them come from? Where did it, and all the different varieties of things, you can't account for that by natural selection. You're stuffed when you get back to where did anything start that has a whole line.
Well, there's clear guidance that some of our basic food staples came and were brought in from other planets and other dimensions.
But even that, where did that come
from?
Right,
exactly.
You know?
But at least it's away from here.
Right.
Rice was brought in from X for a specific purpose or whatever. This is how it's understood. And the rose arrived from somewhere. I mean, it's a wonderful concept because it already begins to blow you out of just trapped Earth consciousness.
But even so, you're still
multidimensional, interdimensional, and that's when you get onto what you're talking about.
Yeah, you're still just stuck with.
And your head here, equipped as it is now, is not capable of doing that because we're on this planet for very specific reasons, which are not necessarily to answer the full questions. Much more to know how to express love in action.
Well, you know, I love
and balance the male female.
Well, I love the way Brian Swim talks about the universe is this creative entity. It is the giver forth of everything, regardless of where it all came from. That's what it does. And it's done it in stages. And the most recent stage is the human. And the most recent stage that the human is all about is self-reflexive awareness. So this universe, which is creating things, has now created the capacity to reflect upon itself. And to enjoy itself and to see beauty and to appreciate. And nothing could do that before. The animal kingdom can't do that. It just operates on instinct. And then the thing that I also find fascinating about that analysis is that what came with the human, the universe took a chance. It took a chance with self-reflexive awareness on evil, that evil and destruction could come in. Because the other creatures couldn't turn on the creation and destroy it. Right. But it took the chance on destruction for the opportunity for appreciation. And I think
right
that's just beautiful.
And we're right on that chance now.
Absolutely.
This is the last throw of the dice.
Oh, absolutely.
And do we get it or don't we? This is the most exciting moment.
The critical time. We're at that point where we really could
not
only have the capacity, but we're now with the actual talent to destroy ourselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we had to get technically proficient
in time. And I think the answer is that it was known that the potential for turning was there, because all the great religions and traditions knew that energetically in the part of the universe through which we are now gliding, there would be changes of actual structure of energy, which somehow lightens up the whole process and makes it more possible for us to awaken. You couldn't have held this conversation 20 years ago.
No. Well, this is a hot time. Sure.
You couldn't have held it.
Yeah.
So it was known. Why do they all prophesy their Kali Yugas and the Hopi prophecy and the Mayan? It all coincides with this particular period.
At 2012, from so many perspectives, seems to be the crossover date of some kind.
Right. A 0 point.
A zero point, right. Exactly. We hear that from many, many different
perspectives. So they were there, it was known, and therefore, in a way, that great gamble was also weighed to some degree. Because if you'd launched that gamble in the old energies that we knew, it would never have paid off. The spirit guidance is that until 87, we were actually behind the scene, and it was a worrying factor. I believe if we'd remained at that level, we would now have had the retaking of the planet by the Niburian demigods. The old prophecies would have come through in Nostradamus and Casey, which are manifestly not happening. And somehow, since 87, since harmonic convergence, there has been an incredible shift.
I understand that as well. There's another wonderful book, the name of which I will remember. I see the jacket of it in front of me. And it's a book by David Hawkins.
Are you talking about Power versus Force?
Yes, Power versus Force.
When I sat in your house,
I took a page
out of that, the map of consciousness, has probably been the main structure of my work ever since. That has been duplicated around the planet so much, and a shift of people's perspective to such a degree you wouldn't believe.
Do you know?
It's a simple page.
Do you know this work?
I haven't read it.
Map of Consciousness.
So this is
called Power versus Force.
So one of us is going to explain this to you. I find this one of the most fascinating bodies of work, and hardly anybody knows about it.
It's quite difficult to get as well.
It's what?
It's quite difficult to get as well.
The book?
Yeah.
I think
it's okay in the States, but it's difficult over here. And
really?
I think it's kind of hovering on the edge of out of print.
Well, he's self-published, you know.
Yeah.
The first place you want to read that book is the epilogue or whatever, the end of the book where he gives his biography, the author. Mm-hmm. And I went to that first, and I was so glad I did, because he's such a legitimate person. He's mm-hmm. a medical doctor. He's in charge of several hospitals. He has many people under him. He's got all kinds of mm-hmm. official scientific credentials. And, mm-hmm. and he also had a near-death experience when he was young in a snowbank. He almost froze to death, and that's what opened him. Mm-hmm. And then he's got the scientific credentials, but he's this open character. And so now you go and you read his work. His work has shown that there's a progression going on, and 87 is a crossover time. There's a scale of 1,000. 1,000 is like Jesus, and zero is, you know, nowhere. And at 200... you cross over into the positive. And humanity in 87 crossed over 200.
Yeah.
And there's several aspects to it, but that's one of the important things. How does he know this, you will say? Where does he get his read from? And here's where it's important to read his credentials first, because mm-hmm. if you read where he gets his read from, you say, oh, nonsense.
Yeah.
But when you read how serious he is, then you're going to pay attention.
Yeah.
And he gets it from muscle testing.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas every human being is the surrogate for the entire universe, mm-hmm. and so he muscle tests some variety of people mm-hmm. and comes up with his statistics. And where you can check, for sure, they all correlate. And so you give him, well, seems to be true, you know. You give him the benefit of your perspective doubt about this maybe woo-woo kind of thing, but he builds his case very nicely about how reliable this is. It's reliable for everything.
But it's so wonderful to use, because when you're dealing with an audience and you're giving them this kind of information, they still see themselves apart from it. And that's what I've discovered in my own work. My own intention now is to challenge audiences completely, to demand of them to explain who is going to bring in all the new institutions, the new politics, the new health and everything else. Do they think the Pope is going to change his mind or Clinton or somebody? No, it's you.
Okay.
And then don't come at me and say, I'm just a little housewife from the back or something or other, because I will then quote the map of consciousness and say, if you've worked on yourself, and you vibrate at, say, 500 up that chart, he kinesiologically shows that just by being here, not even by what you do, by just your presence, you are holding counterbalanced 750,000 individuals who vibrate below level 200.
I love
just
that.
Just by your presence.
I
it's
love
the power
that.
Of 10. That's the.
I mean,
that's
by the time you put that back into an audience, mm-hmm. I defy anybody to leave that hall afterwards and be disempowered.
It's the power of 10. I don't know my math well enough, but the person at the top end, yeah. singularly, is balancing out to the power of 10, so that if you're at 7. If you're at 700, and he says the most we have on the planet right now are individuals at 700, and there's like a dozen of them.
These are the avatarial levels, known and unknown.
And we don't have a Jesus one at all.
Top of the pyramid, no. But no. That's enough to hold the top of the pyramid. Like
and what is seven? What is the one at 700 hold? 700 million?
It's about...
it's a 10 power, but I always get mixed up with...
I think it's about seven. An individual.
Is it 70 million? It's going to be sevens. It's, if that's it's right. seven, seven, it's 70 or 700 like or... Right. Whatever
anyway, the chart's very simple. You can photocopy it, send it out, and people just love it.
But what you get is the power of one, and that one could be you. Mm-hmm. And the higher you go, the more you hold for many millions. It's so ridiculous not to know whether it's 70 million or 700 million, but whatever it is, it's a lot.
Below level 200, those that are still in fear.
Yeah.
Because if this weren't the case, this whole experiment would have exploded long, long, long ago. It's always been held in this pyramidical form. And the capstone is where you have those self-realized beings and those who are on the path towards it. So the 144,000, whatever you like, the people who are really striving to live it, to change their vibrations, end up in the capstone that then holds the whole of the rest in check and in balance. Such a wonderful
I forgot concept. That I passed that along to you. I'm so thrilled that
yeah, well, I had the book, and I was sitting by the pool, and then I thought, this is so precious, and I'm leaving tomorrow, and what do I get? And then suddenly the map of consciousness opened out, and I photocopied it right there in your place. Right.
This is a wonderful book, by the way. It's a fascinating book. I mean, it's full of, you know, all of these examples and correlations, and listen to rock music all the time, you bring your vibration down. Yes, you can map yourself. I mean, he really shows you.
As Elizabeth Clare Prophet gave that very clearly, one of the sensible things I ever heard from her was the use of negative sound and contra heartbeat. And it is absolutely incredible the information that she came up with on some of that really, really heavy, heavy stuff that goes against the heartbeat. The early days were good.
Uh-huh.
Current day, she's underground somewhere.
Well, she's dead.
Oh, she died.
Literally.
Oh, literally underground.
Or just recently then.
A year or two ago,
yes, about a year or two, because I'd heard that she took all her followers underground.
Yeah, she died.
Right. Anyway, so that was one of the really good things to hear about the influence and then how we've exploded a planet, they called it Maldek, on the negative use of sound. And those beings who were involved in that, as many of the big Atlanteans who brought the whole thing down are back, they have to be back here now. This is the third Atlantis. This is the end of that cycle, and we're to get it balanced. So everybody's back on stage. All those that have destroyed through sound, look at them all. Look at what's going on. See all those piercings, all those chains, amazing hair, the coloured hair, all Atlantean. All come
Whoa.
Back. All back.
We're so, Simon, here, there. are we assured? There's no assurance, is there? It is a crapshoot as to how it's going to turn out, right?
I think it's still better in public to say that, yeah, we still have to make the effort. There are people like Drumble and Melchizedek who put out some time ago that we've already reached our critical mass. That may or may not be, but I never think it's a very good thing to broadcast that. I think you always need to make the effort. I think, and our guidance is that we are actually at a critical level, we are clear. But in the debris, in the wake, in the physical world, all hell will break loose.
I'm happy to hear you think we're clear, because I have not gotten that, and God knows it makes me anxious, you know.
No, I think we are, but that's not necessarily that every physical human being gets through.
No, that's what I was going to say.
Not necessarily, that's free choice,
yeah.
But a critical mass of people will hold, and that's my work, is the planetary fabric. I'm actually much less interested
what
in
it looks
the human
like
species
on the,
from yeah. that perspective. Humans are free, they have yes. free choice. Their bodies, they come back, they will come back. But the planetary body is precious. And at this time, to actually be part of the reconstruction of the grid, which is essentially my work, is what I'm passionate about. And that's why
you
I travel
Bruce
as
Kathy
I do.
Does he have anything?
Look, everybody's doing their thing. Yeah. You see, a lot of quite well-known people, and people always say to me, oh, do you know this, and have you done this, and you ought to meet Prince Charles. I think, no. we are all doing our specific things in a magical way that at some level is dovetailing. And when we need to meet, we do. But in the meantime, certain soul vibrations are called to a certain sound. You know, it's as though somebody blows a whistle and you say, I like that sound, I'll go to that, that's fine, that suits me for now. That's soul family. And those soul families do their work. In my case, it's doing energy work on the planet, running tours, having a lot of fun. It's not heavy, but it's taking people to really, really important places that are synchronistically led. And there you have opportunities through harmony to integrate certain levels of energy that allow the new grid to start to form. And once you form the new grid, nothing in this third dimensional world can stay the same. Your politics are finished, a new grid is being placed on the planet. And once that grid is in, which is precisely what happened in South Africa, how do you think all that stuff suddenly shifted? There are groups of people who have been working there for years on the power sites, all the way up and down Hog's Back, Drakensberg, Pilensberg, outside Johannesburg. Mm-hmm. There are certain grids in South Africa that have been worked. Mm-hmm. And as those are eventually brought together at the right timing, the right astrological timing, you change the basic structure on which politics and social life actually function. You just pull the carpet from under them. Mm-hmm. So what happened with your premier at that time? He had his stroke, that then brought in a more enlightened man who then released Mandela, etc., etc., etc. All these things started to change. How does the Berlin Wall fall? How does the whole of Russian communism fall? How does the whole of East Europe suddenly, almost overnight, shift? These are energy workings that are being given to us, partly by spirit, partly by aware people, who conduct certain processes at certain times and change the structure. So for me, this is the most potent way of working. And it's best done quietly.
Yeah.
One doesn't want this stuff blazed around. Luckily, most people think you're mad anyway.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
Yes, that's fine.
Gives you more freedom.
Yes.
But who wants to go around? I mean, I've put a bit out through a book.
Is that your only book?
That's the only one. I mean, it'll be the only one, probably. There'll be a 10-year gap. The next one will be quite different. But it's not really advisable for too many to become involved in that stuff. Mm-hmm. Those who are drawn to it will find their way to it and then will give it expression themselves. And it was only meant for a certain number. Mm-hmm. Many initiations are done on the planet way ahead of their time. The mass public catches up later. It couldn't be otherwise.
It's so encouraging to be with you, really, and to just tune in to your certainty about these kinds of elemental ways that you can actually participate in and that are significant. And
you're free to do it.
Yeah, it's really wonderful. I really appreciate that, because it does tend to become overwhelming and you think, oh my God, what can I do? And, you know, all of that.
Yeah, so that's when I throw back the map of consciousness.
Yeah, this is wonderful.
The audience would say, oh, yeah, so glamorous and your thing, how wonderful, and we'll come and listen to your talk next year. I said, I don't want to see you next year in my talk. Mm-hmm. I want you to tell me next year what it is you're doing. And I'll fly over the world to come and support you. That's the difference.
Yeah.
It's an empowering mission. It's not disempowering. And a lot of New Age still is, look at me, look what I'm doing. Which disempowers the audience totally, because they're so mesmerized by all this stuff.
Well, this is our habitual way of being the audience and just being appreciative, perhaps, of the speaker, but, you know,
not motivated.
But not picking up the, the baton.
Not at all. Our thing this year with Holistic World Vision was very much, as was the Dalai Lama's as well, I discovered subsequently, the new millennium was the time for a call to action. And this was about getting the awareness movement, those who are in it, those who are awake, actually motivated into the next stage, which is doing something about it. It's starting to have the discussions and talks about the new politics, because left-right-wing politics, of course, is totally redundant. It's sterile, it's finished. It's absurd. So you get up and you do something, you work it on circles of wisdom, as the indigenous peoples always did. So you empower everybody across society, locally, nationally, internationally, globally, in circles of wisdom. We don't have a political structure anymore. new money. The financial system is absolutely, utterly and totally corrupt in the West. It's on its last legs. We need to get something in place in order to be able to put it in as the old collapses. You have to slide it in. My question and challenge is, what groups and who are actually moving out of the audiences of ooh-ah-ooh-ah and having their house meetings of people in their area who are interested in actually constructing the new concepts and the new ways of being.
Mm-hmm. Yes, a lot of people are trying to move things in to circular energy that comes into that they leave in their wake, so that it's not just them speaking. But exactly. Nobody's been able to really pull that off
it's
yet.
It's very hard.
That effort that has been made by a few of the really nice people around to initiate that sort of mass movement of circles of citizens.
But that concept that those good people who are sitting in the audience who are awake and aware that somehow there's just a little more effort to be made, mm-hmm. that they don't really understand that map of consciousness, perhaps that. Just by having a meeting of three people in your own home talking about some new ideas or new ways is itself powerful. Mm-hmm. Because no thought on this planet, no idea started other than with one person talking to another, mm-hmm. who involved a third. Look at Gandhi, look at anybody. Mm-hmm. It started from that. And if you can empower people back into that concept, mm-hmm. that's where all the greatness begins.
Mm-hmm. And now there's enough information around, yeah. so that people aren't sort of wondering what they what they think. No. I mean, there are plenty of people that have really been indoctrinated.
That's what I'm talking about, the awakened, the aware. Yeah. This is not, we've held meetings now since then around the world that are specifically what I call non-entertainment. So there is not a speaker. People are invited to come to network, to have a piece of paper, to fill that piece of paper with the phone numbers and addresses of other people in the room, plenty of cups of tea, lots of intervals, lots of chat, lots of mix and match, and really get people into an understanding in an area that they are properly linked, and then an undertaking that when they've got their list full, they will ring those people and keep a connection. That's the basis of our new way of working. So we're not entertaining anybody. We're just having them come together. But that's not for people off the street. They wouldn't understand what happened.
Yes.
They still need the entertainment and the talks.
Yes.
But I'm talking about those that have been well processed by the likes of you and me over the last 10, 15 years, who are still sitting there just coming to workshops and audiences and thinking your children's by attending.
Yes, anybody.
It's not enough.
Yes, any way that could be kicked off into reality, it would be absolutely wonderful.
That
would be the next wave.
Exactly. That's came for us in January, 15th of January, in the Worthing Town Hall. We had 100 people who were so thrilled by it, I couldn't even get rid of them at the end of it. We had to pay an extra hour in the hall until we physically pushed them out. That was no entertainment. They entertained themselves in England. We've had them subsequently around the world and getting the idea germinated that that is really what is needed in the awareness movement. Mm-hmm. So all those who know on your lists, kind of get them together, give them a cup of tea, get them rapping and moving and whatever.
Oh, this is
and give them the empowerment of your map of consciousness. Mm-hmm. Hand it to everybody. Say, look, this is the truth. You just go and sit and talk about your blueprints and your ideas, it will become empowered, the energies are fine for it now, go for it.
We should contact Hawkins and speak to him about being active in
his
own...
He's got more to do to make that active.
Behalf,
to make that an active blueprint, because it's so precious, it is the foundation.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And yet I'm sure people still look at that sheet and think, oh, fancy me, when I hold 7 pounds, and do nothing more about it.
Yeah, well, it's something. It's
it just sticks
to get
in
over.
The head.
Yeah, it's a hump to get over, but it's such a worthy pursuit. We should enroll him in that, or suggest that he enroll us in that.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think we'll do that. We'll make
really
some contact with him.
He's over there in California.
He's in Sedona, I believe.
Sedona. You know Chet Snow, my friend there?
Why wasn't I mentioning that to Chet? He was just here yesterday.
Chet is becoming a very good sort of promoter of kind of sensible, aware conferences.
Good.
And it's precisely one of those where you get the aware of America beginning to gather, that you kind of launch a little bit of a challenge, come on, let's take it to the next stage, let's do something.
Well, okay, I'm excited.
Chet should know about that. And he's got a big one coming on with Boval.
Yes, he said he did.
He'd had all that, and Sitchin coming next year. A big one. And he does
let's meet them.
I'm very pleased with what Chet's doing there. But it, as I say, there does just need to be another little push.
Yeah.
Be awake and be aware, because we cannot just go on workshopping each other.
Yes, yes.
You know, we keep repeating it, we keep saying the same things.
And it just lies there.
And as we are now in the times of the change, of the destruction, you will see the shift in finance. It's going to be led by America. But just on the verge, it will probably be this fall that it really starts to take hold. I don't think the Western world can move until it does happen, because, of course, it then eradicates the great god of the West, which is Mammon. That must be challenged at a profound level, so that people are then challenged to accept a different reality. While they can buy themselves out, they will. You don't have to be faced by this at the moment. You can buy a trip to Florida, you can go to the pub, you can drink yourself silly, you can get in your car. While money still dominates, people will not take this seriously at a mass level. So we need some cleansing of that process. But you don't want some alternative systems, even worse, imposed. So there need to be a lot of people like my friend Dr. Margaret Kennedy in France, in Germany, you know her, Interest in Inflation-Free Money. Wonderful book. 12 languages translated, international bestseller.
What's going to shift us over into another radically different system? You think a collapse?
It doesn't have to, or the collapse comes. But the shift is not so radical. We still use this exchange rate, but we use it in a fair and empowered and balanced way.
Pretty radical.
This means dealing with interest, which is the first problem. Usually, we all know about that. And of course, it's part of the Kabbalistic Jewish tradition and the Islamic. So that must be cut out. Banks don't pay you interest. They charge you for parking your money. Interesting little twist. So what does everybody do? Spend. Spend, which is flowing, which is loving, which is unconditional, which is moving, which is empowering everybody. That's just a simple concept, but it's a radical twist. Think about it. So a lot of it doesn't have to be rethought. On the political agenda, with the circles of light, of course the indigenous peoples have been doing this always. That is how they work. So it's not so complicated in your local area to suddenly empower people to sit in a circle, even if they're not the official representatives of the people as you begin to meet. Say you do it in your house, for instance, there in Hollywood, and you get a certain number of people who start being the alternative local government. And it works, and people hear about it. And then the certain moment comes when the old begins to fail and scandal and whatever, and there Suzanne Taylor has around her the most incredible grouping that has a lot of the answers that people then want to vote for because it's much more sensible. And what do you know the next minute? You've slid it in. It's that concept of being more practical and not on the big mass converting the world scale, very much local scale, which is where bartering and let systems have done nicely in local areas. We have a lot of them in England and Australia, they're very big. There's a lot of exchange trading to the local level. It's very effective. That's where it starts. So get them going, and then as the other collapses, slide them in. It's very simple. But if we don't do it, we leave a vacuum. And then who knows what might happen. And then I think the New Age really has betrayed. Because if we're not using what we've been given in order to apply it in a practical way, then I think we have betrayed.
It does seem like we're at some kind of stagnation point of being loaded up with some preparatory kind of initiation, and something hasn't given way. And as I check with people from various places in my network, everybody is feeling this kind of stuckness.
It's that courage to move forward. Yeah. It's the bird in the nest. The bird is now plump and fat, and the feathers are all there, standing on the edge of the nest, and it just needs
that jump
that needs that kick. You've got all the universal laws, you've got all the information, you've got the internet, we've got things at our fingertips that we can use. What are you going to do in using them out in the world?
Yeah, we thought Y2K might kick us over, but it didn't work.
Well, that would have had, that could have been some really valuable ramifications to being short of things and to be, supplies curtailed and money confusion.
Oh, shake-up so that we might have reorganized.
Yeah. It was interesting that it didn't, but maybe at the higher levels we are, although we don't see it to our own eye, maybe we're further ahead and didn't need that.
I think in the aftermath of Y2K, if you look back, we got a sense that we could have a worldwide conversation, I think. And I say that because I was in the thick of it.
It did open the debate.
And there was this sense that you could really communicate about one issue, one situation, many ideas, much contribution, and something, you know, things took shape.
There was a pulse.
Yeah, there was a pulse, and things came out of it, and things, plans were laid, and, you know, preparation was made, and it was a hard go, but there was a real energy that really was a worldwide energy. So you got the sense that in spite of the top heaviness of governments and whatever, there was this underground that could actually function, you know?
And that's the exciting thing, because it was people power in this way that eventually Chinese governments. We got this moment yesterday, something called Dump the Pump campaign in this country, because fuel is the most expensive fuel almost in the world, and the people are fed up with it. So although it wasn't well supported yesterday, the information about it went absolutely everywhere. Now every Monday, without any limitation, will be a dump the pump day. And this has very radical effects on fuel supply and governments and revenue. That's going to build, and the people are going to affect directly through the new Aquarian revolution communication, are going to affect definitely all politicians, particularly egotistical in the way that we have. They are not going to survive this.
Yeah.
That's why we're going to have to go into circles of wisdom of people representing the grassroots of what people actually require.
Well, you know, they say whenever a new technology comes along, like the printing press, something major, it's not just an addition to what you're capable of doing. There's a radical transformation of a whole world order around that. And the internet does seem to be that next one. Although, and at the beginning of all these new things, you do kind of try to replicate what you had before and make it better and whatever, until eventually it seeps in how radical the change can be because of the new capacity. And I think that the internet, we're just at the beginning of sensing what the big, big changes are going to be, not just, you know, we've got more information, more access to information, but that we really have a new way to connect ourselves.
That's the global brain.
Yeah, the global brain, right, and it's the power to the people, and it's democracy in some sense at its most essential, you know.
And no president or politician will ever control us again, will ever get in between us. We can say what we like to each other. There'll be
exactly, there's a truth being told that you can't have the wool pulled over everyone's eyes anymore, because you get on the internet and immediately the wool is being dissected and laughed at, and
and that's our hope. And then you can at very short notice do this mass meditational mind linking. They've now got one out for August the 17th, which will be an anniversary of the Harmonic Convergence. It's going to be a very big one again this morning. Again, trying to get that critical mass around the planet on that day to be very, very focused. Now, you can deliver that. You can deliver millions on one of these well-presented days. And it's been done ever since 87. We've had many of them. We've had Time Shift. We've had so many. Every year there are dozens of them. And I know that the speed of networking, that provided people do hold that focus, and I think they're well-intentioned enough to do it.
Well, it depends. You know, it depends. We're still, I sense, at the beginning of acting out that way, although the invitations are out, but the auspices putting out the invitations are still not totally acceptable to everyone, so that an invitation that's interesting goes out, but you don't like the auspice, so you don't participate, you know. But again, it's the beginning. It's the, you know, it's the little seeds of what can really develop that you're starting to get this glimmer of.
Well, that's what came when we drove to the airport that day, idea of the win-win wave that I had.
Yes, that was a wonderful
which
idea.
Which was incredible. We've promoted that. That is at midday every day, basically to have a positive thought about somebody else or a situation. The idea is simply that in a wave around the planet, that there's a constant positive frequency. And to leave it as open as possible to follow up on your point. So there's no confusion about the invitation. It's simply stop, reflect, and be positive.
And the power of our minds to really draw reality to manifest.
Exactly.
But, you know, again, that will take some credibility, some way that, you know, it becomes acceptable. But the ideas are there, the germs are there.
The germ is there. I mean,
and the carrying capacity of the technology is there.
That's
now.
Right. But if you divorce it from New Age speak and all sorts of other things which tend to limit, you could have an idea of the Essenes held it after all thousands of years ago, and midday it was held in attunement.
It's such a good idea.
It's a very good time to stop, because most people look at a watch at midday, even if you're busy with something else. there's nobody too busy to stop for just for a pause of positive thought, which is enough. It doesn't have to be a long time. It's just recognizing the moment, synchronizing it with people. And you can be creative. You can use it for mass linking. You can decide every day to send it to a trouble spot on the planet. You can send it as a healing to somebody. It doesn't matter. Mm. And, of course, it'll rebound. That's why we call it the win-win wave, because if you send a positive thought out, you'll get it back. And that's very open, broad spectrum. So who's going to refuse it in schools? No religionist can get in the way of that. No, because it's too open. We want it at the Olympic Games, the opening ceremony of the Games. A minute's silence.
Mm. 1 minute warning on the tape. Should I go get another one? This is so good. I think this should be your web radio show for next when we get back.
We could maybe, just use it.
Thank you for listening to the conversation.org, making sense of these times. Now that you've heard from us, we'd love to hear from you. Click the feedback button on the show's webpage and share your thoughts. We'll be posting new shows approximately once a week. If you would like to be emailed when new shows are posted, let us know. This show is brought to you by MightyCompanions.org, dedicated to encouraging the awareness of ourselves as a one life and providing a meeting ground for those who share that awareness.